The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yes, thank you, Howard. I'm glad we overcome the technical issues and we can chat about some of the exciting things that are happening in our part of the world.
Yep, we can indeed. Tensions increasing in southern Israel as incendiary, I hate that word, I find it so hard to say, balloons cause fires.
We have to find another word for incendiary, Howard, so we'll have to look it up. I'll have to go on to find a synonym, for incendiary. But unfortunately, that's the term that's used. Yeah, I mean, it was a busy day yesterday along the Gaza border. Over 60 fires broke out near along the Gaza border area. The fire brigade, local residents, and the IDF were all very, very busy indeed. Putting out these fires. Something like 500 acres of forest and agricultural land have already burnt since the Gaza factions renewed their attack via these incendiary balloons just about a week ago. It's really just been a week since all of this has gone on, and it's really escalated to a point that has been quite surprising for many of us. And of course, it comes with threats from members of the government. Prime Minister Netanyahu threatening that the Gaza Strip, he didn't talk about Hamas particularly, but said that the Gaza Strip will pay a heavy price if the terrorists continue to send balloons over into Israel, and that, you know, others have described it as the balloon terror will carry a heavy price. But the truth of the matter is that in spite of Israel trying to develop all kinds of technologies and different ways of combating these balloons, it's been very, very difficult to do so. And the most infuriating thing of all is that it costs almost no money on the side of the terrorist to send these incendiary balloons over. It's just the simplest thing, the cheapest possible piece of equipment. And the damage that can be done on the Israeli side is uncountable. So it's really a very, very serious issue. The Defense Minister, Benny Gantz, said that Israel had halted the transfer of goods through to the Gaza Strip at the major border crossings as a result of these ongoing tensions, and that he said that Hamas will act harshly. That he warned Hamas that Israel would act harshly against it if this continued. Now, there was some speculation that the uptick in this activity is because of Qatari money no longer flowing into Gaza, and this is the way that the factions in Gaza want to send their message, not to Israel, but to Qatar. And so the idea is, you know, if we light fire in Israel, then hopefully Israel will send the message to Qatar and the money will continue to flow. I'm not sure how true that really is, and how much we can really rely upon that. But unfortunately, at the moment, things are really not good where the balloon terror is concerned. And I'm not really sure what ideas the Israeli security authorities have to try to combat it.
Indeed. So, it's a crazy situation, and it always seems to happen, of course, this time of year, when things are at its worst, in terms of the weather.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we have had some strange weather, and perhaps we'll have a chance to talk about it later, but unfortunately things are very dry, and of course the prevailing wind allows those balloons to be carried over from Gaza towards Israel, just using Mother Nature, literally the wind to blow the balloons over from Gaza into Israel, and the rest is the rest. I mean, none of this is particularly targeted. It's all, you know, just stab in the dark. It's just, as they would call it in Hebrew, shitata matzliach, just try your luck and see whether you succeed or not. And of course, many of these balloons don't succeed. But the point is that because they're so cheap to put together, there's no reason why they shouldn't just construct hundreds and thousands of them and just try their luck wherever they can. Some of them are even carrying not only some incendiary device, something that will just set fire to land or items that it comes into contact with on the other side of the border, but some of them even carrying explosive devices, as we've discussed in the past.
Very frightening indeed. Prime Minister Netanyahu has now claimed that the U.S. has kept him from annexing a part of the West Bank. All right. Well, at least I think we should be thanking them for that. But nevertheless, why has the U.S. prevented him from proceeding with the annexation, and why would he make this announcement?
I think it's all confusing speak, in my humble opinion. I don't think that the U.S. has actually prevented him from annexing the West Bank as such. And actually, when we analyze exactly what he said simply that the U.S. became too busy with other things to pay any attention to this issue. So it's not that he was actually prevented. It's not as if the U.S. government turned around and said to him, don't do it. It's more about the fact that the U.S. government wasn't in a position to actively support the initiative. And I think the important thing the important conclusion that we draw from this is that without active support from the U.S., this is not going to happen. I think that's my conclusion. That's what I've understood from some of the words that the Prime Minister has said. And again, I mean, you know, when we go back to what significance there is for this annexation, I mean, there obviously are reasons why Israel and the Israeli government would wish to annex parts of the West Bank, even those parts over which Israel currently has autonomy, almost autonomy, even though Israeli law doesn't necessarily apply in those areas. But for all intents and purposes, those parts of the West Bank belong to Israel. There are Jewish Israelis living there. They are part of Israel and citizens of Israel like every other citizen of Israel. The only slight complication is that Israeli law doesn't apply there. So I don't see it being such a huge development, such a huge change to the situation if Israel was to annex it. However, the main change is that it becomes enormously difficult, or a lot more difficult, to backpedal, assuming some sort of an agreement is reached, whenever that might be, in the lifetime of my great-grandchildren, perhaps, I don't know, but assuming that some sort of an agreement is reached, it becomes a lot more difficult to divvy up land that has been formally annexed rather than land that is still under some sort of a military arrangement. And so I think that it's all about facts on the ground. It's all about establishing, making things a little bit more difficult to undo afterwards, if indeed that might be the intention of people in the future. So I think that that's really the main difference between leaving things as they are right now and actually formally annexing it. I don't see any other big significance. And in all honesty, I would find it enormously difficult to believe that this land that we're talking about would in the future be given up to a future Palestinian state. I think that would be also difficult for me to contemplate because of the number of people living there.
Yes.
So I don't see the annexation as being such a huge deal. It's just all about Netanyahu being able to say for posterity that he was the one who made sure that no future Israeli government could give that land up if that's what they wish to do in the future. And I don't think there's any more than that. But of course, people are now asking, well, why was there such a huge issue about it? Why was there so much publicity about the annexation and about sovereignty and about things which, suddenly went under the radar about probably about 2 months ago? We heard a lot about it. It was in the news every day. Foreign leaders were arriving here despite Corona to discuss it and to express their concerns about it. And all of a sudden it went away. So people are saying, why did it suddenly go away? So this is the Prime Minister's answer. It went away because the U.S. government doesn't have time to think about it right now. And so therefore we infer from that without active participation, active involvement by the U.S. government, this is not going to happen.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And D says, why don't you just call them terror balloons or fire balloons?
Terror balloons.
I'm going to go with terror balloons. Anati, can we call them terror balloons?
Yes, I think I'm good with that.
Terror balloons make sense. That's what they are.
But also, I don't really have your problem because, I mean, I say incendiary all the time during my news. So it's,
I'll just say it.
Practice makes perfect. Incendiary.
No, you see, you're fine with it, so you can do it. But I think I'm going to go with, thank you, Dee. I think I'm going to go with terror balloons. I like that even
I'm writing it down on my little list of things to remember.
People of a certain age, Anthony, that we have to do that.
Exactly.
A smart security network provided by an Israeli company has been selected for deployment in South Africa. What is the solution?
Well, I like this story because, of course, it's very close to home for many of the listeners. And this is South Africa's Metro Fiber Networks, a company that apparently provides quite a lot of security solutions and internet connectivity for quite a number of different areas of South Africa. It seems as if, though, they're based within gated communities and commercial complexes and private residential estates and areas like that. I'm not familiar with the company, but maybe it would be more meaningful to the listeners out there. But what we do know about this company, Metro Fiber Networks, is that they have selected Israeli company RAD's solution as a some sort of a platform, a smart security solution that's being deployed in these areas where Metro Fiber Networks actually works. So in the commercial complexes and gated communities and communities that are managed by residents associations and things like that. And what we understand is that this RAD solution will involve putting hardware equipment on all of these smart poles that are being set up by Metro Fiber Networks. They put these smart poles in. They're going to have some sort of a piece of hardware on the smart pole. And these are effectively switches that will enable secured connectivity and communication from one place within the community to another. And that will carry all kinds of information, including intercom and visitor management platforms. It will carry access control, CCTV, Internet of Things devices, license plate recognition systems, panic buttons, all of those types of things apparently will be carried on this network. And I think it's an interesting development, particularly because we've seen so much anti-Israeli speak within South Africa, BDS trying to do whatever they can to scupper Israeli Israeli commercial links with South African companies. And yet, apparently this solution is good enough or so good that Metro Fiber Networks decided they couldn't give up on it and they decided to implement it.
Yeah, I think we see a lot of that. I think there's a lot of noise where people are able, but at the end of the day, no one actually cares. People are really very simply interested in economics, in improving people's lives, and BDS is unfortunately interested in exactly the opposite. They don't really care about anybody's lives. They only care about destroying Israel, and I think that South Africans on the most part actually see that and don't really care about the agenda. We've got only 2 minutes left, but I do want to talk about the weather. I was talking to somebody in Israel on Sunday, and he said, "Whoa, sorry, I've just got to run to my car. It's raining." And I said, "What do you mean it's raining? It's August. It doesn't rain in August." And he said, "Yeah, it's almost like a South African summer where we've had these showers or these storms in the middle of the day." What is going on?
It's been really, really crazy. I mean, just so that people understand the background, during the summer in Israel, you don't get a drop of rain, not at all. For the best part of 5 months, you hardly see a cloud in the sky, never mind so much as a drop of rain or a shower of rain. So the weather forecasting job during the summer in Israel is the most boring thing you could ever hope to
tell me the humidity levels that differ.
Humidity and whether it's going to be 35 degrees or it's going to be 34 degrees. That's the significance of, you know, one day to another. And then all of a sudden over the past few days, we've had this really, really strange situation where there's been quite a lot of rain in the north. Some places reporting 2 to 3 millimeters of rain. There was even some rain in Tel Aviv the day before yesterday. Meteorologists are saying that the weather, unseasonal weather, has been caused by low air pressure over the eastern Mediterranean, and that there could be rain for a few days. So people were really, really shocked by this. And I have to tell you that Israel as a country is completely geared up towards a dry summer. There's, you know, people do things, leave things outside and plan activities outdoors without even giving the first thought to the possibility that there could be rain. And yet, the day before yesterday in particular, but also, on Sunday in the north, there was a lot of rain. took people by surprise. Rain is always welcome. Let's not kid ourselves. But a little surprising, a little unusual, a little unseasonable. And, you know, what do we say? Is this global warming that's causing rain? I'll leave you guys to decide yourselves.